I just have one more, and it's a quick one here. I'm going to flip the courtroom on you, Joey, and put you on the stand. And I've seen your social media, so did you or did you not allegedly wear pajama bottoms while being on air many times throughout the COVID pandemic?
So I have been always advised. I've advised my clients for a long time, Kerry. That advice has been to exercise their constitutional rights. And their constitutional rights include this amendment. You may have heard about it. It's called pleading the fifth. So while I won't incriminate myself, I will say that if I was sworn to tell the truth in any particular setting, from the safe perspective, I will say that I will neither confirm nor shall I deny such a thing. And that is the way I will answer that question.
There you go. Yeah.
Recognize that voice? If you watch CNN, you may recognize the voice of Joey Jackson, legal analyst for CNN and Headline News. Welcome to Where Golden Eagles Soar, the SUNY Brockport Alumni Podcast. I'm Michael Doyle, class of 1980.
I'm Kerry Gotham, Director of Alumni Engagement at SUNY Brockport.
On today's episode, we meet Joey Jackson. He's an attorney with a successful law practice. You may not know he's a 1988 graduate of SUNY Brockport. So how did he go from Brockport to starting his own legal practice and CNN? Today we find out on Where Golden Eagles Soar. Where are you from originally? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the boogie down Bronx where the people are fresh. I won't sing to you guys, trust me.
But oh, please
a song
do.
It says boogie down Bronx where the people are fresh. One DJ who could pass the test. So yeah, I came from the Bronx to go to Brockport.
Hard question. Do you remember how you came to come to Brockport? Like why you picked it or?
I remember completely. Completely. I remember it's a whole big story and I'm glad to tell it. You mean you want to hear it?
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to hear it.
I say I'm glad to tell it. People are like, no. When I went to high school, I was one of these kind of people that never prepared. I was just not really ready. I was not a great student. And I went to a pretty good high school. It was Iona Prep. Senior year comes and I fancy myself an actor because I was in one play in high school, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. You have to listen to the soundtrack to that, by the way. It's an amazing soundtrack. And it was just a fascinating play. And I wasn't Joseph. I wasn't a star. I thought I could, you know, sing a lot better than I actually could. And so I told my mom, I said, you know, Mom, I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go to Broadway and I'm going to try to make my way. And she said, you are not going to Broadway, son. You better do something. So in any event, my mother said, you know, you're not going to do that. You're going to go to college. And by the way, I've researched this and I see the school upstate because I think you need kind of a fresh perspective. You need to be away from home. You need to experience sort of the world. And the name of the school is Brockport. And I said, Brock who? She said, Brockport. And we're going to go and we're going to see. They have this orientation and I want you to see what it's like. And, you know, we're going to see. So my mom did the research on these schools and saw what she thought might be suitable, as any loving mother would. So I went with her. We rent a car, we go and we're staying on campus. And then the next day you go and you go to different classes and you see the campus and meet the professors and administrators. And so to make a very long story short, we get to the campus, I don't know, I'm going to say 4:30, 5 o'clock that day. I take the rent a car and I say, Ma, I'll be back. I'll see you. You know, so I go and I ended up just touring the campus, meeting other students. I'm like, it was a whole new universe. I'm like, this place is pretty cool. I loved everything. I loved the, you know, the buildings and the architecture and the grass and the students and the people. And it turned out that they were having some event and they had these fraternities and sororities. Long story short, I got back to my room at about 7 o'clock the next morning. And, you know, my mom, I had no way. It was not like cell phoning, texting, paging, right. Nothing like that. I came back. And I try to go to sleep. And she's like, you're not going to sleep. We got a full day of orientation. So we sat in the first row of every single, you know, class that we went to because they were, you know, presenting about various things about the school, whether it was the athletics, whether it was the academics, whether it was the housing life. And she literally spent the day elbowing me in my ribs so that I could stay awake. Little did she know that I had such a magnificent experience the night before with just taking in the campus. And I'm like, this is the coolest place. Little did she know whether I went to one orientation event or not, I was going to Brockport. I had my heart set to Brockport. I really want to go there. But because I was, you know, didn't work hard enough in high school, they said, we'll conditionally accept you. You have to do the transition program. And the transition program at that time was you took three college courses. And in the event that you got a B or higher, you know, you were accepted into the school. And I said to myself, I am going to work as hard this summer as I've ever worked in my life. And that's when, you know, who I was actually born, because I said I wanted so much to get into this school that was far enough away, but close enough away, an hour flight. You know, at the time they had People's Express. It was literally you pay on the airplane.
Yes.
Like you would do. You know,
right. Yeah, right. People, it was like a bus. Yeah. It was like a bus that flew. Something.
Yeah, it was so crazy.
Yeah.
And so what ended up happening was, is I worked hard. I got three A's. I remember the courses, self, college, and career, sort of finding you about who you want to be. And that's why I'm like, hey, I think I could be a lawyer. And then there was another course that dealt with art and artistics. And, you know, there was another course that I can't recall, but I did really well in them. And when I got to the school, I said, I'm going to work my butt off. And I did.
Very early on, you mentioned that you were interested potentially in law and being a lawyer. When did that spark start?
So interestingly enough, it started in two ways. The first way was that I took that course called Self, College, and Career. That's what it was called. I'll never forget that, however many years ago. It was a course about what your interests were, and it helped you to do a real introspective about, you know, what you're all about, what you like, what you don't like. And I really never, the sciences I was not really good at, but I always liked to be expressive. Not that I really in my younger years wrote that well, but I did like to express myself. I loved history, all the courses we took about government. And I learned through self, college, and career, that was my interest. And I could get a career where I like to write, so I could be able to write. I could talk my way out of things and maybe help a few other people. And so during that self-college and career, I kind of was like, man, this law thing might be something that would really be not even like working.
Let's jump ahead a little bit here with you have your own practice now, your own firm, and you appear regularly on CNN. But can you talk about kind of the evolution of how you got to that point after finishing at Hofstra Law with your law degree and kind of where you went after that?
I can't begin to tell you the amount of times I failed. Boy, I probably took the LSAT. I took it multiple times. And, you know, before I felt that I did well enough. And then I applied to various schools, ended up getting into a few that I really liked. It was really between American University and Washington, D.C. and Hofstra. And Hofstra was kind of an afterthought, quite frankly. Because I was working at the New York State Assembly at the time when I was at the Graduate School of Public Affairs and Policy. So I got a job at the Assembly. I worked for the mayor after graduating from Brockport. I worked for the mayor of New York City at the time, who was Mayor Koch. And then I went to Albany to take a job for the New York State Assembly. And taking a job for the New York State Assembly, I ended up, going to school. And it was funny because they had a tuition reimbursement program, but you had to be in the assembly for 2 years as an employee. And I said, I'm not going to wait. Let me just do it. It was great because at the end of 2 years, I had my degree, but they also canceled the tuition reimbursement because of budget cuts. You know, I started law school right away. I graduated in August from the public affairs school, and then I went to law school. And I worked hard. I did well in law school. I was the graduation speaker for my law school class as well. I was on the labor law. After the first year, I was top 20%. You know, I just found that when I worked and I worked hard, I did well. And when I didn't work, I didn't do well. But I did well in law school because I applied myself. And that's a testament, I think, to everyone. If we work, we'll do great. If we don't work, we won't. And so after that, I became a prosecutor in Manhattan at the district attorney's office, and I ended up getting the Criminal Justice Award my first year there. And then it just strangely enough, one of my fellow alumni from Hofstra and also from the prosecutor's office, he actually talked to me about this job opportunity as a defense attorney. And I wasn't looking to leave. The way they do with the prosecutor's office is they have a 3-year commitment. And I left after 3 years, not because I was looking to leave. It's just that another opportunity came across that day. And so I ended up leaving. And so I ended up working at this law firm for Deans and Serrants, which did law enforcement. And we represented, detectives. We represented correction officers, et cetera. And then that morphed into another opportunity at another law firm called Kohler and Isaacs, where I spent 20 years of my life doing all kind of trials and cases. And then I just said, you know what? I think based on what I'm doing, I really can do more. A law firm of my own. And that's a whole nother story. But that was a major struggle. I went into it with a partner who I met in law school and a person who I had a lot of respect for. But, you know, we had different visions of humanity. You know, I never want to cheat myself in life. You get one time to do this. And therefore, I started the firm with him, parted ways with him after a year. Just digressing 1 minute to the media thing, I worked for Fox News for 5 years for free. Literally, they would call me and they would ask me to, you know, come on and do this, but they would never hire me or, you know, even give me a part-time job or a contributorship. But I didn't, growl or snarl or whatever else. I just continued to work. And in continuing to work, that led to other calls. When you're on TV, it's not a secret. So other networks call you and determine, hey, you want to work with us? And finally, I got an offer for Court TV. And that sprung into Headline News, which sprung into CNN, which worked out pretty well. So, you know, I think the moral of the story is you got to keep battling. I remember when I first went out on private practice on my own, I didn't have any clients. I didn't have anybody. It was me and a paralegal and Cynthia, who you know, and we were working out of the cafeteria. And then I just started getting one call, another call, another call, another call. And before you know it, you know, I built a firm with, you know, with 6 lawyers to date, in addition to, you know, our 4 paralegals and our, just support staff and marketing people. And that's how it's done. You just got to keep your head down and keep moving. And that's what I did.
So, Joey, we were talking a little bit about you told us kind of how you ended up, on CNN and worked your way through, you know, unpaid roles with Fox and things. A few years ago, you and you were kind enough to come back and co-keynote the gala, the foundation, the college gala with Ryan Nobles. And I wondered if you could, if you remember, can tell the story about how you came to discover that Ryan, who is at CNN, and you both were Brockport graduates, I think, like a decade apart. Did you know that, or did you suddenly discover one day that you both had gone to Brockport?
So it gets even stranger than that, Michael. What happened was, not only were we 10 years apart in terms of graduating from Brockport, not only were we both Brockport student government presidents, but the strange trifecta is that we both share September 15th as a birthday. Wow. How crazy is that?
That is crazy.
Like, isn't that crazy? We're 10 years. I'm 10 years his senior in terms of age. The other stuff, intelligence and everything else. So he's 10 years mine. But, I'm 10 years his senior in terms of age. So we're both September 15th. We both were president of the student government 10 years apart, graduated 10 years apart. I thought it was absolutely insane. And then when we, you know, got to, he was in New York and, you know, we got to talking about just our backgrounds and things like that. And the discoveries were just, it was just riveting. It was almost like chills went down my spine. Right. What are the odds of that happening and two of us being at CNN also? So he's a tremendous resource. He's knee deep in the whole political thing. And I think it serves his interests well for a few reasons. You know, I was always taught that success comes when preparation meets with opportunity. I think he's a person who's always very well prepared. I think, you know, by virtue of him being at Brockport, going to Brockport, having the Brockport experience, that has made him prepared. He's gotten the opportunity, you know, through the media realm, and based on his preparedness with the seizing of the opportunity, he's become exceptional and a valuable resource. So I think that's number one. Number two, I think it's a very political time. I think when he was feeling, you know, when he was really even developing, you had this, you know, former president who was breaking the mold of what the presidency looked like. So I think he was ideally suited to do that. And then number three, you know, by no small measure, I think based on what he and I both learned in being student government leaders and being at Brockport, was just how to handle yourself. And I think if you can handle yourself and kind of, you know, deal with people and explain events and make things reasonable and logical and explain it so that everyone can understand it and not just you, you know, you can do pretty well. And I think those are three dynamics that account a lot for his success in addition, you know, to the hard work and everything else. But that's why he's so prepared.
Hey, Joey, can you take us behind the camera for a sec? Because we not all of us get to do live TV like you do on CNN. So when that countdown comes, 3, 2, 1, and you're on, and I know you've been doing a long time, but what goes through your mind and what is that moment like?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's like anything else. You know, when you do it and you have the repetitions of doing it, you reach more of a comfort level in doing it. So what happens is that they prepare you and give you every resource that you need in order to succeed. Like talking about not only the story, what they like to focus on with respect to the story and what's significant about the story. And so, you know, I think when you work with and for people that gives you the tools you need to be successful, it really lessens your stress and anxiety. You want to give the perspectives and let the viewers decide. In every legal scenario, right, and I'm speaking from legal because that's what I'm about, but I think it's with other stories too, you know, there's always two sides of it. And I try to the best I possibly can in addressing side one, side two, and letting viewers draw their own conclusions. To the extent that you've done the research on the story, that you are aware of the angles of the story, that you're aware of what they'd like you to cover through the story, that you're aware of your narrative that you would like to expound upon in the story, it makes the 3, 2, 1 less of a traumatic event and more of an event that you look forward to, so that you can have the opportunity to add value, right, in education, in the education of America, about what you think is important. I can't draw. I can't, you know, I'm not a scientist. I can't do equations. I'm terrible in math. And the reason I just say those things to you is because you might have people in that line of work who might view this as a very stressful enterprise. Whereas if I tried to draw something, do a mathematical equation, you know, deal with chemical compositions of biology, it'd be the most stressful event in my life. I'd be sweating bullets all day.
Hey, Joe, you've given back to the college in a lot of different ways over the years. Recently, the foundation announced the Joey Jackson Intercultural Center, a naming level gift. You know, can you give us a quick kind of look at why you give back to Brockport and why this specific program, the Intercultural Center, is important to you?
So two things in terms of why give back. I think that all of us, and then I'll address the Intercultural Center. I think, you know, all of us come from somewhere and we are all helped by a community of other people and the graciousness of those people. If it weren't for Brockport, where would I be? If it weren't for the experience that I had there with my fellow students and us all trying to learn and grow and develop and have a human experience, both academically and socially, you know, it kind of really developed and transformed who I was. If it wasn't for the professors who took their time to work with and develop and to show kindness and grace, you know, where would I be? I mean, I have student stories, I have professor stories. So, you know, I can't help but really look at an institution that has had so much to do with who I am. And to the extent that I've benefited from that background and from that foundation, to really feel that it's not my obligation and privilege to give back to what has given me so much. And in terms of the Intercultural Center, there's few things that I'm as proud of as that. I think we live in a multicultural world. I think that if there's one thing that we need, you know, now more than ever, is tolerance for one another, respect for each other's views. You know, we could disagree without being disagreeable. We can have opinions, you know, without you know, bearing arms against each other. There's just such a volatility, you know, in the discourse, particularly of this time, that to have a place where people of different mind, you know, could be of like mind for the purpose of just respecting people as people, I think is a major testament. And, you know, when I think about it, it probably has a very much deeper meaning to me even than it does to school. Because if you know kind of the path I walked and the relationships that I've had and, you know, the interactions that I have daily with people of different varieties who are, you know, lifelong and dear friends, whether they be Jewish, whether they be Muslim, whether they be African American, whether they be whomever. I don't care who people pray to. I don't care, you know, who they love. I don't care, you know, what they're about. So long as they're humane, decent individuals who could be trusted and respected, you know, you could be my friend and I'll be yours all day and all night. And so it's part of who I think I am, and I want to be part of who I always will be remembered to have been, you know, when the ride is over. So to have something like that, that I think represents what I stand for, you know, is just tremendous.
Joey Jackson came to Brockport an average high school student, but his time at the college helped him find his passion and made him realize that hard work can pay off. For him to a master's in public administration, a law degree, his own legal practice, and now the legal analyst for CNN. As he told us in the interview, he believes we can disagree without being disagreeable. A noble sentiment. And what of his CNN co-worker Ryan Nobles, who graduated a decade after him in 1998? We'll meet him in our next episode of Where Golden Eagles Soar, the SUNY Brockport Alumni Podcast. For Kerry Gotham, I'm Michael Doyle from the class of 1980. Thanks for listening.